I'm going to take about 10 or 15 minutes here and give you the highlights of the study. The team at Informa Economics has been hard at work on this for the last couple of months, and our charge really was to try to put some numbers and quantify the cost around this proposed rule. I don't think anybody has been particularly happy with the cost work that USDA has done with regard to this rule, or maybe I should say lack of cost work. A little more in-depth dive was called for, and that's the project that we undertook here. With respect to specific objective, it really was kind of a twofold objective with this study. First, we wanted to estimate the likely response of industry players and participants to this rule, and then kind of second to that, estimate the economic impact. And obviously, you have to kind of have some basis in order to estimate a cost as to how people will react, how industry players, how companies will react. And given the vagueness, I will say, of this rule, the first part of this objective was quite a challenge, is to really kind of get a good handle on how we thought people would react. Quantifying from was a little bit more of a straightforward exercise once we came up with an estimate of how responses would play out. Let me at this point say that in this type of work, you have to make a lot of assumptions, and nothing is hard and fast about this rule. So in the places where we did make assumptions, I'll try to point that out, and we can defend the assumptions that we made. It was basically a four-step process involved in this study. The first of those steps involved industry interviews. We got out and talked to players up and down all supply chains for all species. We talked to folks all the way from retail and food service down to the producer level, getting their reaction to the rule, asking the main question to them was, okay, assume the rule was implemented as it's written. How do you think you would respond? We collected that data and then moved on to step two, which was a cost survey. Now, the bulk of these rules are directed right at the packer processor segment of all the supply chains. So we surveyed packers and processors for their estimates on cost of complying with the rule. And that was a bit of an arduous process, as you might imagine, to pull all of those estimates together. And I will compliment the processor community for being responsive in providing data to us there. When we completed step two, those two pieces worked into kind of the output calculation, if you will. You got to recognize that most of the components of this rule are injecting new costs into the system. And when that happens, the costs are not going to be borne at that processing or packing level. In longer term, they're going to move to either the consumer or the producer. We used a very simple economic model to illustrate that and to then kind of capture how much quantity or output in each industry would decline. Obviously, as you add cost, you're going to shrink the industry over time. So that was step three. We came up with an output impact in each one of the species, and then that became input into a larger economy-wide model, an input-output type model, so that we could make some statements about how the rule, if implemented, would impact things such as employment, GDP, and overall output tax revenue is another aspect of that. So let me jump straight to I'm going to jump right to the punchline here. Everybody wants to know what was the overall total economic output. We find this rule, if implemented as it stands now, would likely reduce annual GDP by about $1.5 billion, would cost about 23,000 jobs, actually 22,800, and would result in a reduction in tax revenue of about $359 million. About 46% of that tax revenue would be at the state and local levels. keep in mind that as we estimated and went through this process, our job was to try and figure the most likely outcome. There's probably a pretty wide band around these figures that we've produced where the actual outcome could fall. By industry, and let me, before I walk through these specific by industry cost estimates, let me say that we first divided cost into two broad categories. You have direct cost and you have indirect cost. Direct costs are things such as information systems or people that you might have to hire in order to comply with the rule. Indirect costs are things such as lost efficiency, damage to demand perhaps in a particular industry or species. So there's the distinction between, we separated those two categories of costs. And then the direct costs, we separated even further into one-time costs and then ongoing costs as well. Okay, the one-time costs being those just initial outlays, and that might include things like actually building an information system to track pricing differentials, if that's what you what a company needs to do to comply with the rule. Or it might involve costs associated with divesting of assets. If the rule is written such that it might force them to divest of assets, that would be a one-time cost. Your ongoing costs, direct costs, are the salaries of the people that you have to continue to employ to comply with the rule, the support for information systems and so forth, extra transportation you might incur, and et cetera. So by industry, the one-time direct cost we find to be $39 million in beef, about $69 million in pork, and about $28 million in poultry. That's poultry taking chicken and turkey together, for a total of about $136 million. Pork is a little bit higher than the other two in this area, because I think the reason for that is that we found more need to divest of assets, what would be likely in the pork industry compared to some of the others. With respect to ongoing direct costs, and this would be on an annual basis, we find the beef industry would have to shoulder about $62 million in ongoing costs, the pork industry about $74 million, and the poultry industry about $33 million, for an ongoing total of about $169 million. And these would be costs that would not remain at the packer or processor level. These would be costs that would eventually be borne by consumers and producers. The indirect cost is where the real punch is at for this rule. The impact, if you can tell by the size of these numbers, is much greater than the direct cost. In beef, we estimate the indirect cost to be nearly $800 million. In pork, $335 million, and in poultry, pretty close at $341 million. A total impact of about $1.45 billion. And before I get the question, let me explain the reason that beef took the biggest hit or got the biggest indirect cost is we feel, after having looked at it, that beef will suffer the most in terms of what we might describe as demand destruction packers pull back on their use of alternative marketing agreements. We thought that the beef industry, the numbers intended to work, the beef industry had the most to lose there. So certainly the indirect costs are the biggest piece. And then we took the extra step of working through the economic model to see how much of each cost would be borne by consumers and producers. And I'm going to report here what percent of that cost increase would fall to producers. In beef, it's 82%, in pork about 56%, and in poultry about 20%, 19 or 20%. The reason for the difference is here, again, beef producers take a big part of the hit because a big part of the costs are related to declining demand as AMAs and product quality deteriorates if this rule is in effect for some time. Poultry has a much smaller number, and it's almost difficult to identify. The poultry production sector is not the same as in beef and pork, that it would be costs that really fall to the integrators themselves. With respect to output reduction, as I mentioned earlier, you can expect industries to shrink when you inject cost into the system. And our analysis would suggest about 500,000 head in beef, maybe as many as 1.25 million head in pork, and for poultry, something on the order of about 56 million birds. That would take into account both the chicken and turkey. And then I'm gonna wrap up here in the last few minutes with some discussion about the responses. I talked early on about it was kind of our job to help discern what is likely to happen. And these are more qualitative than quantitative, but I think they're very important, and I think that they deserve some time here. The first thing we think is very likely to happen is that you're going to see a reduction in the number and the variety of marketing agreements, or AMAs, as they're often referred to. The reason for this is directly related to the provision in the rule that removes the need to show competitive injury. We think that in order to limit legal liability and legal exposure, that it's very likely that the Packers' response is going to be to reduce the number and the variety of these marketing agreements. They won't go away completely. We did not make that assumption. We just think that they will change in nature. Keep in mind that a lot of these marketing agreements help to supply product for a very lucrative end market. And I don't think that's going to go away right away. So while there will be a reduction, there won't be a complete elimination of marketing agreements. I think we're going to move to in the hog markets, attempt to move towards a single daily price. One of the things that we heard over and over again from those that work in those markets is, the rule says we have to justify all differential pricing. That in the way the daily hog market works, it's quite common to have one price in the morning and another price in the afternoon. And the only reason for doing that is because the market has moved and maybe the packer didn't get the animals he needed to fill a kill schedule. In those situations, the packers it's unclear to them what kind of liability they might have for paying a differential price. Just because the market moved. Their response to that, well, we'll have to go to a single daily price so that we don't incur that liability. Thirdly, I think we'll see movement away from live pricing in cattle. This is something that was articulated quite frequently to us as we engaged in the interview process. Here you can imagine, and as most of you probably know, judging the quality of an animal live is a much more difficult task than in carcass form. Packers face the risk, once again, because of the liability, the legal liability that's going to be created by this rule, that they might actually pay more for one animal than another because it was judged better live than it actually turned out to be when it was in carcass form. They feel that creates a legal liability for them, and I agree. And the natural response to that is to try to push more of grading to a carcass basis or a grade and yield basis. Lower base prices for poultry producers are likely to result from this. There's no way that this rule, as it goes into effect, is going to automatically raise the value that integrators pay for birds. They will do a recalibration. I'm fairly sure of this. They will do a recalibration. And the rule essentially says that they must set a base price and then they can pay premiums to that, but no discounts. They'll just recalibrate that base price downward so that their net cost is not changed as much or maybe unchanged from the pre-rule status. So I think that's one effect you'll probably see right away. The abandonment of the tournament system by some integrators, I'm not quite as confident that will happen quickly, but that's a possibility. We'd like to raise that as a possibility. We think they may go to a different approach for paying growers and abandon that tournament system because of the burdens that the rule places on them in that regard. certainly think that there's a chance of greater vertical integration in beef and pork because of this rule. A number of players told us that, well, with the burden that the rule places on the packers, we couldn't blame them for trying to bring more of that production under their control. And that was is a very – now, there's cost associated with that, certainly. But in this case, the benefit may outweigh the cost, too. So I think we may end up with, you know, if you ask me to look 5 or 10 years down the road, a more vertically integrated beef and pork industry than we have now as a result of this rule. And then some last thoughts, and I wanted to be sure I mentioned this. We do think that this rule, as written, is going to have a significant impact on livestock auction markets. This is something that hadn't been talked about much, but there is a real potential. But keep in mind, one of the provisions of this rule says that order buyers can only work for one packer. What we think will happen there, that has the potential, when that goes into effect, to set off what we might refer to as a death spiral at some smaller auction barns, where it goes something like this. I'll give you the one-minute version of it. Packers can no longer share the cost of an order buyer, if you will. And that's essentially what's happening when an order buyer works for more than one packer. They can't share that cost. Their cost goes up. They're going to employ fewer order buyers, and they're going to send them to the larger sales. What will end up happening from there is you'll see a decline in prices at the smaller barns, and it won't take long before sellers at smaller barns realize that they can get better price at a larger or more centralized location. They'll move animals in that direction, which will decrease volume at the smaller barns. It sets off a spiral then to where we could actually see the demise of, we estimate as many as 150 to 200 of the smaller, more isolated sale barns in the country. The overall economic impact of that is huge for the communities in which they're located in. For the economy wide, it's not that huge because business that moves from a small barn is now being done in a larger barn. Granted, producers will incur some additional transportation costs. Another point I'd like to make is that we don't think the economic impact is going to be immediate with respect to these rules. It will take 2, 3, maybe 4 years to reach the levels that we've reported here. I think on day one, when it's implemented, you're not going to see much difference other than maybe movement to single pricing in hogs or attempt to move to carcass pricing in cattle. But the real damage in terms of efficiency losses and quality losses won't really materialize until we get several years down the road. These impacts will have a very long tail on them. We'd say at least a decade or more. We'll still be feeling the impacts. Now, they may not be as strong 10 years from now as they are in the third or fourth year, but they will still, the effect will still be being felt. And then finally, just to wrap up, you know, as I went through this and I recognized all of the outcomes here, it occurred to me that so many of these outcomes are detrimental to the small producer. I mean, if you think about, well, first of all, if we inject costs into the system and the industry shrinks, smaller producers generally have a higher cost structure, and they're the ones that typically will exit the business first. So that's one impact on the small producer. The sale barn impact that we talked about here, I think, would disproportionately affect small producers. And the move to away from live pricing in cattle would disproportionately affect small producers, I think. So there are a number of elements here that seem to weigh heavily on the small producer. So that's all the comments that I have.